Good evening. This is part two of what we've been discussing this morning. I always appreciate the things that Steve mentions in his prayer with reference to our nation and the affairs that we have to deal with politically and socially in our society. And the Lord's will be done in those matters, and we hope and trust that they will be. But keep in mind also, as good citizens, we need to do our part in voting for those matters and in praying regarding them, even as the Lord taught. And as you may recall, if you looked at today's bulletin, the article I wrote regarding that today. It's so important for us to pray for our leaders. This morning we were looking at the plant which the Heavenly Father did plant, and the apostasy that it suffered, and the variety of weeds that had sprung up then afterwards. Those things that the Father did not plant, and by His word, and I can only repeat what He says, they shall be rooted up. There's no way around that, unless, of course, we deny what the Scriptures teach, and we don't want to do that. I don't think any of us here would do that. Obviously, none of us here do that, or we probably wouldn't be sitting in this house tonight. In the midst of that growth and apostasy and reformation and restoration and so on, the Lord's people continue to suffer fractures and separations and apostasies, and we're going to look at, and digressions, we're going to look at some of that this evening. As I mentioned from the back this morning, just like this tree that we looked at this morning could not hold all the divisions that there are in this in our world, in our country, about the denominations. When I said there's over 1,200 denominations, that's a pretty conservative estimate from figures I'd read years ago. It's probably worse than that now. It's probably way beyond that now. And so when we look at this current apostasy and digression, I'm not going to be able to look at everything. There's just too much. But I will speak with some general guidelines with reference to things that are happening in our brotherhood and are still happening and probably will continue to happen until the Lord returns. It's just the nature of people. For some reason, some folks just don't like to stay on the straight and narrow. They'd rather wander, either by ignorance or on purpose. It's just going to happen. And we need to resign ourselves to it. Before I got up this evening, I've been thinking about the fellowship that this congregation enjoys with other congregations. And up until about 2 years ago, in Ohio, there were three congregations that were pretty close, bosom buddies, I guess we could say, very close. You know that that's no longer the case. And I'm not going to get into all of that. Somebody might wonder, why does it have to be this way? I'll tell you, I wonder that. I just plumb get sick and tired of it. I do. Of the fractured fellowship that the Lord's people go through. So many times so unnecessary. And then I began to wonder about the first century and what the brethren there, what they had to face. They had to face a lot of pressure from the government, of course, and persecution from Judaism. And they had their share of false teachers and divisions and immorality. I mean, read the New Testament epistles. You know that's true. You know that's right. And so I began to wonder, how many of the New Testament congregations that we are aware of, there's Rome, and possibly five congregations in Rome, if we understand the church that is in their house, as Paul uses that phrase, in the city of Rome. How much fellowship did they have together? Then there's the churches of Galatia. So we know there's more than one. There were probably three. Lystra, Iconium, and Derbe. There might have been others. And each of those towns may have had more than one congregation. There's the churches of Galatia. There's Corinth and Cenchrea. Cenchrea is the port city to Corinth. And so just down the hill from the city of Corinth was Cenchrea. And there were believers there. Of course, the city of Corinth had a congregation, at least one that we know of, possibly two. And various others. We read about the seven churches of Asia. They were in fairly close proximity. How much interaction did these congregations have with one another? I don't know. I know there were some. There's some. Because I know that when Paul wrote to Colossians in chapter 4, he said, be sure that this letter is read among you, and be sure to read the one that's coming to you from Laodicea. So I know that there was some interaction here and there with some of those things. Remember in 1 Corinthians 16, Paul said, as I gave the churches of Galatia, so do you also. These brethren probably knew one another. And of course, when there was a joint concern, a task at hand with reference to the famine that they were facing, and therefore the great collection that was being made, that we read about in 1 and 2 Corinthians, we read about it in Romans, probably Romans 15 may allude to it. Some other passages, maybe, we can pull those together. We know that the brethren in Judea were suffering, and those in Asia Minor were helping them out. So they knew something about one another. But as far as real close back and forth interaction, I don't know. I don't know of that much. And so sometimes I get to feeling sorry for myself, and I think, why can I not have the relationship I used to have with Brethren Springfield or Steubenville or Pomeroy? Why does this have to happen? Why can't we have fellowship with brethren at Alkire or Gehanna Jefferson? Why is this happening? And then I realized, because not everybody wants to stay on the same page. Now, I don't know whose fault that is, particularly. I mean, I may have been able to do some things differently. We as a congregation may have been able to do some things differently. I don't know. Hindsight's usually pretty clear, isn't it? But brethren, I'll tell you, I don't know what we could have done that would be any different than where we are right now. I don't know. I think that we've stayed on the straight and narrow. So does everybody else. They think that too. So what do we do about this? We need to rest ourselves in the fact that if we do what is right, we will be able to see generally more and more day by day those who are walking with us. And we'll be able to see those who no longer walk with us. We'll be able to see it. It might be heartbreaking, but it's just something we've got to face. That is the current apostasy. Well, let's start like we did before. We're going to start with the churches of Christ B.C. There was such a thing as the Church of Christ B.C., and I don't mean before Christ. If you can read that from where you're sitting, that means before colleges. There was the Lord's people before they had so much emphasis on secular institutionalism. Now, there's a group of folks who like to call us institutional brethren. Those are the folks that we generally call them anti-cooperative or antis. And we're to them, we are the institutional brethren. Well, there are some institutions that have God's sanction. That is, there is authority to have them, such as Bible classes. Sure, we can have Bible classes. And I stand ready to defend our right to have a separated Bible class, put the children in a class and the adults in another class, and so on. Some say, no, you can't. That's an institution that God didn't authorize. Well, they're dead wrong, but we won't discuss that now. Then there are those who will say, well, you're using some kind of an institution to educate young people. Well, there is authority to educate young people. There is authority for us to, as a congregation, to educate our young people. Now, what I have to draw the line on, and I happen to agree with some of those brethren, some of those people, I'm not sure I can call them brethren, I'll talk more about that later, is that I'm not convinced that the Lord's treasury is used to support a secular college. I just don't believe that's God's plan. I don't believe that's right. Now, you can if you want to. You can send your money to a college if you like. And obviously you do if you're going to pay tuition. But I mean, just to send it to the general treasury to support the school, the church isn't authorized to do that. And again, I'll stand ready to defend that statement. Then what about taking care of the poor and infirmed and the orphans and the widows and so on? The Lord gives that task to us. We have it individually, if you want to look at it that way, from James 1. We have it collectively, as we have it from Galatians chapter 6. We have authority to do that. Now, there are some who are doing that kind of work in an unauthorized manner. I think there are some who are going about it wrong. But it's still something that we can do. It's an institution that we can take care of, if it's done correctly. Sadly, however, it's not always done correctly. So here are the churches of Christ who have authority to educate their young people and to take care of the orphans. But how we go about that is a matter of some discussion. We're not going to discuss that now. Some have gone too far, in my judgment, and that's what this illustration is going to show us, in supporting of and thinking that and having a denominational mindset, in my opinion, a denominational mindset thinking that the colleges are the work of God. And they are not. The colleges and universities are not part of the Lord's church. They're secular institutions. God's people can support them if they want to. It's not the church's job to support that. So there's the churches before colleges. I'll call them the remnant, for that's what we've always been called. But then there are those who would consider themselves, and I think to this very day they probably consider themselves, the mainline churches. You've heard the term, maybe. If not, it's time to become aware of it. The mainline churches, give you a thumbnail sketch, are for the most part in the big cities who lean to the left and somewhere, somehow support some college or university. Those are the mainline churches. But we'll see this progression as this tree grows here, how that came to be. That's where it is today. And how that came to be. Mainline churches of Christ wanted their colleges. Once again, there are some aspects of that education that are viable, I suppose, authorized by God, not out of the church's treasury to support a secular institution. But certainly individuals can do so. Brethren can get together and educate their children. The first modern apostasy shows up. I'm sorry about that color red. You can't see it very well. But it's called, what's up there is the first modern apostasy. We talked about apostasy this morning. It started in the second century. This is one that came a little bit later. This was about 150 years ago. The first modern apostasy when the churches broke up was the result. The result of that was the Christian churches. And there's all manner of Christian churches. And I've got them on the left side of my tree here because that's an action of liberalism. The Christian churches, such as the ICC, that's the Independent Christian Churches, the CCC, that is the conservative Christian churches, which are more liberal. There's the Disciples of Christ, and there are some other offshoots from that. We discussed some of that this morning. And so when this first modern, I'm saying the last two centuries, century and a half, apostasy came along, the mainline churches reacted and moved a little farther over to the right. Am I pointing the right direction? Moved a little farther to the right, sort of as a reaction to the great split that took place. Became official, at least in some people's minds, in 1906. Wasn't that when the census was? 1906, they were actually declared a separate denomination. And that's precisely what they are, denomination. They have denominated themselves. They've split off from the original. That's what a denomination is. So, because of that split, some of the mainline churches moved a little bit to the right as a reaction. You know what it means to react to something? For every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. So the laws of physics tell us, I forget who gave us that rule, Sir Isaac Newton maybe, or somebody or other, said that that's right. Well, there's such a thing as reactionism. That is, for everything that happens, you react just way too strongly for it. And so sometimes we will overreact to something. Now, that's what many of us have been charged with reference to our stand on music in the worship of God, what God requires for worship, especially whether or not we should have instrumental music, or you're just being reactionary. And guess where they claim this reaction comes from? The Civil War. Did you know that? Many of them say, well, because the Civil War, North was divided from the South, the North had all the money, they could afford the organs. And the South didn't have money, and they said, no, we don't dare have an organ or a piano. Hogwash. That's ridiculous. And though it might be the case that some of the stronger churches in that day were in the South, and there was a lot more liberalism up North, it's not because of money. It was because of apostasy, because they didn't want to hold to the truth. And so they're saying, well, you're not using instruments just as a reaction because we have the freedom and the liberty in Christ to have an instrument. Really? How do you know that? And that's where the debate begins, whether or not such practices are legitimate, whether or not they're authorized. That's where the debates all come in. The debates do a fine job. The debates are good. Some years ago, an elder's wife remarked in a setting that had several of us sitting there. This was in Bellevue, Nebraska. And she said, boy, I just wish all of those brotherhood papers would go out of existence. And, to some degree, I agree with her because of some of the bad things that have been the result of some of those papers. But some of those papers did a pretty good service in keeping brethren informed of what's happening. Some do. And I'll speak more about that here in just a minute. Some of those have lost their direction. Even such as the More Sound and those who want to stick with the right and are doing a pretty good job with reference to exposing error, but are playing the hypocrite in certain areas, and that's even contending for the faith. Which in times past, some people say, well, that was contentious for the faith because they're always fighting somebody. No, I think they were doing a great job standing up for what was true and right and exposing error. But I fear they've fallen into some hypocrisy in the last few years. And I'll discuss that in a moment as we get there, as this tree grows here for us. So here's the mainline churches moving just a little bit to the right because of the reaction to the Christian churches. Then a new form of liberalism came in. That's what that next word is there. If you can't read it, it's liberalism. And this liberalism caused some of the churches to move a little more towards the center. Now, they were still to the right, still wanting to kind of stay there where the main line was, but they moved a little farther into the center. This new form of liberalism was a liberalism of lawmaking. Guess who that is? Well, that's what we call antiism. The liberalism of lawmaking was antiism. They made laws where God did not. Most of us are familiar with that. I'll just say quickly for those who may not be all that familiar with antiism, is that you can't have a Bible class. You can't have a located preacher and pay him from the treasury. You can't support widows or orphans in an orphanage or help to support someone in an orphanage. You can't... See about some kind of a secular institution to educate your children or your sons, particularly to preach, to become preachers. You can't do that. You can't cooperate with a sister congregation to do evangelistic work. You can't do those kinds of things. You can't use more than one cup when you eat the Lord's Supper. You know, one of the simplest illustrations I think we can find in the scriptures regarding multiple cups, did you know it was in there? Is in the gospel account of Luke. Read it sometime. I think if you read carefully, you will find more than one cup there on that table. That's not where our brethren got their authority to have more than one cup like we practice here. Because the emphasis in the scripture is not the container. It's the liquid inside. That's where the emphasis lies. But it's still interesting to note that in Luke's account, the Lord took a cup, gave it to them and said, "Divide this among yourselves." I wonder how they did that. Suppose they held it in their hands? I doubt that's what they did. But they divided it amongst themselves. How they did so is a matter of some discussion. The liberalism of lawmaking. Mainline churches at this time, this would be in the 1940s and into the 50s particularly. The mainline churches with their colleges were now beginning to seek university status. And if you know anything about colleges and universities, there's an awful lot of laws and rules and regulations that are provided by the state that these schools have to answer to in order to become universities. And so we've now stepped outside the realm of brethren doing this business of secular education, and now we have to bring in what the state tells us. We have to bring in what the world says about this college that our brethren started. When they start seeking university status. Are there any Christian colleges that are still just Christian colleges anymore? I wonder. Lipscomb's not. Freed Hardman's not. ACC isn't. OCC isn't. Pepperdine isn't. Michigan Christian isn't. Are there any Christian colleges that are still just colleges operated only by our brethren to educate our brethren? I don't think they are. And if they are, I'm ignorant of them, and I will admit to that. The mainline churches from this point, as you notice, start moving a little farther to the left. These mainline churches, colleges, and universities are now moving a little farther to the left, getting away from where they started. And then another form of liberalism came up, and we found it in the colleges. That's liberalism. That's what's up there next. A new form of liberalism came from the colleges. This is called a liberalism of law breaking. Notice how they rhyme. There's a liberalism of law making, the antis, and the liberalism of law breaking. What do we typically call them? Liberals. But both of these are liberal. I reject the notion, and I do not accept the thinking, that the antis are more conservative than we are. I reject that. They're liberals. They're taking liberties with God's word that they are not authorized to do. And so are the liberal. They're just flip sides of the same coin. One binds and one looses, which is strictly forbidden by the Lord. Both are liberalism. They've gone beyond what the Bible teaches. In this case, The professors and the theologians of these higher institutions of higher learning are telling us such things like the book of Genesis, particularly the first 11 chapters, is nothing but a myth. It's a song. That came out of ACU a few years ago. And more recently, out of one of the schools, and I can't recall which one it was, I just can't, I'd have to go look it up, was telling us that there were two Isaiahs that wrote. One wrote the first half, another wrote the second half, and both of those Isaiahs were conferring with the others around them, and they came to the conclusion that they're really, the work of the devil is actually the work of God. What? I wrote a critique of this so-called professor's sermon. Somebody emailed me a copy of it, and it's rather lengthy. Actually, it's in several parts because it was a recording that came out of his class. If I'm not mistaken, it was Lipscomb, but I'm not sure. I wish I could call. I'll look it up. And he was saying such things as the adversary. Well, that's actually God there. And so he was bringing the adversary in to thwart his people. God is tripping up his own people. Now, why would God do that? Well, he had a theory as to why that was happening. Other such theories that come from the professors and the theologians are telling us such things as the books of Moses wasn't really written by Moses. That was written by four other sources. The JEP and D documents, called technically the documentary hypothesis. Well, that came out of some of the German rationalism that I talked about this morning. But our brethren picked it up, and they start parroting that nonsense as well. The Bible really isn't inspired. Miracles really didn't happen. Jesus might not have really lived. And how many times does PBS run some stupid special, either at Christmas or at Easter time, looking for the real Jesus? How many times do they do that? And showing the so-called discrepancies and hypocrisies or contradictions of the Bible. Where does that come from? Colleges and universities. Well, now watch this. The colleges and universities, since about the 1930s, have been solidly steeped in Marxist socialism. Now tell me about the good Marxist who even believes in God. Well, they don't. But where do these Christian college professors who are wanting to become universities, where are they hiring so many of their professors these days? Out of these secular institutions. Dr. So-and-so is going to be on our campus. He's going to take over the Bible department. Now, some of the rules of these Christian colleges said all the faculty has to be members of the church. And some of them might still hold to that. Not all of them do. Some of them are hiring secularist people out of Methodist universities and Dallas Theological Seminaries. They're all dead there anyway. Hiring these people to teach our young people. Why are we surprised then that our young people come back home from college and don't believe what the preachers and the elders are saying any longer? And they want to bring in some changes, and they want to do away with one thing and bring something else in, and so on and so forth. The churches are falling apart. Typically in the larger cities. What do the churches do when this happens? They keep moving farther to the left, farther and farther, accepting this garbage. Well, in the 1960s, there was a reaction to this called the schools of preaching. And in that day, there were some pretty well-known schools of preaching, such as Sunset School of Preaching, White's Ferry Road, Bear Valley, and also Memphis School of Preaching. I think Bear Valley and Memphis started the same year. I think it was 1965. And so I've included Memphis in another spot for a reason. But these are listed here, and they're on the right-hand side over there. They are reaction against the leftist liberalism of the Christian colleges and universities who are hiring these professors out of secularism and destroying the faith of thousands of young people. Destroying that faith. I know that firsthand. One of my very best friends and working companions is Chuck Northrup. He sent his sons to school, to college. Well, he sent all of his kids to college. And the eldest came home and said, "Dad, I just don't believe the things you preach anymore. I just don't think instrumental music's that big of a deal. I'm not even sure that Jesus is the only begotten Son of God. He's coming, he's bringing this home from Christian college, university. And now he says he doesn't believe God. He's an agnostic, or if that's what he thinks. I don't know, maybe he even thinks he's an atheist. How can this be? He didn't learn it at home, didn't learn it at worship. He learned it at college and brought it back home. So the schools of preaching that were established in those days did a fair job, I guess. I don't know an awful lot of, don't know very many people, men who've come through those schools, but I know they changed. In a moment, we'll get there. But notice what the mainline churches and universities are doing. From that point on, they continue to move a little farther left because of a reaction to the schools of preaching. And so now we have this division in the country that's very marked. Before it was just kind of shady shades. Well, you know, I don't think we should support this. But now there's a marked difference. Brethren in these schools of preaching are pointing out the errors of these universities and colleges. They're saying, look at what there's being taught here, just like I'm doing tonight. The mainline churches and universities, therefore, began to move a little farther to the left. And guess what happened? This is what happened next. The large congregations in the big cities were separate from, no longer worked with, had a different way of thinking than the medium-sized congregations in the smaller cities. Big versus small. And over here on the left, the larger cities and the larger congregations in the big cities are university towns, for the most part. It's where the big colleges are. It's where the money's at. Literally, it's where the money is. A lot of people stay there. Why? Well, number one, it's what we've always done. Number two, well, that's mainline church. I mean, that's the church of Christ. That's who we are. It's what we got to do. What are you, some kind of an anti? See, that's the charge that comes up next. Let's see, is that my next? Yeah, there it is. In the 60s, it happened twice. Once in the 60s and once in the 90s. A form of neo-antiism was brought as a charge against some of those who were opposing these universities and colleges. The schools of preaching were charged with being neo-antis. You're a new form of, neo means new, a new form of anti, because you're opposing mainline churches. I mean, this is the way it's always been. Jesus went to Christian college, didn't he? So, because nobody wants to be called an anti, some of those schools of preaching moved over to the left. Am I pointing the right way? Some of them moved over to the left, such as Sunset, White's Ferry Road, Bear Valley, there might have been some others, because nobody wants to be called an anti. The other neo-antiism charge that was brought in the 1990s was where yours truly had to make a distinction now. He had to part ways with some of these brethren that I've had associations with for years and years. You know what the new charge of neo-antiism was? Women translators, of all things. You'd think those sound-minded, solid brethren who opposed the Christian universities and other nonsense that was taking place would understand the simple teaching, the simple fact, and the simple illustration that women aren't supposed to preach simply because they're doing it in Russian rather than English. But our brethren can't see that. So now, because I say, no, this is contrary to what Paul teaches in 1 Corinthians 14, 1 Timothy 2, now I'm an anti. Okay, that's where I'm at. I think some of you are there with me. So this new charge of antiism in the 60s and 70s and then in the 90s caused some people to swing to the left. Others weren't moved. So the schools of preaching had a separation. Now we have quite a number of pretty sound, concerned, biblical brethren on the right side who wanted to continue in the old paths. Memphis School of Preaching, pretty good school for quite a number of years. I do not endorse them now. The Southwest School of Biblical Studies, that's what that SWOBS is. OABS, the Online Academy of Biblical Studies, I believe that's the words there. GBN, the Gospel Broadcasting Network. AP, Apologetic Express. HCB, which is the Houston College of the Bible, and that's something else now. The SWF, that's Southwest Florida School of Preaching. There's quite a number of schools of preaching. There was one up in Michigan, in Flint, Michigan, I think it was. There are other little schools here and there. Some of them have become colleges since that time. But they stayed on the right-hand side opposing this liberalism, which is what they should do. And then just a few years ago, all that started to come to an end. Before we get there, let me just remind you where the mainline churches are, the way over there on the left-hand side, with their universities. They're on the left, and as far as I can tell, there hasn't been much change for about 30 years. That's where they are. That's where they've decided to stay, over there on the left. There is not one so-called Christian, which a term we shouldn't use with reference to secular education anyway, it doesn't belong there, Christian college or university that I would recommend. And you know what? There's not one school of preaching I could recommend. Not a one. Because of what's happened the last two, 3 years, since about 2005, about 5 years. Or was it 2006? The last very few years, number of years. This is what happened. The big city churches versus the small town churches. Now, I asked Brandy this morning, because I thought this was true, where she worshiped. She worships in a little bitty town. Now, she goes to school somewhere in the Cincinnati area. Go like that. Somewhere in the Cincinnati area, all right? And you know there's gobs of churches down there. But where's one that can be sound? So mom and dad went down there. They searched high and low. They're looking for a congregation where their daughter can worship at a sound church. And they found it in a little bitty town. I don't know how big the church is. You can go like that or like that. If it's a pretty small church, small congregation, she's motioning like this, something about like this. Well, this sister is a small congregation. So she found a place, because that's what's happened now. Without very few exceptions, brethren, no matter where you go, if you walk into a large congregation of the Church of Christ, I guarantee you, for the most part, if there's any exceptions, I'm not aware of them yet, they'll be liberal. You want to find a sound church? It'll be something small. That's what's happened in this current aggression that we're in. That's what's happened to us. Big city versus small town. Many of those schools of preaching, so-called, that were on the left-hand side are gone, or nearly so. You know, you can always tell when a school of preaching or a college or a congregation is on the wrong side, pardon me, where they're starting to go astray or they've gone astray, is when they offer up a program, a seminar, a meeting, some kind of a special put-together deal for the brethren, and either they charge you to go to it, that's making merchandise of God's people, 2 Peter chapter 3, or chapter 2, instead of brother so-and-so, it's doctor so-and-so. You see the doctor, you know that congregation is sick. Something's wrong there. That school is ailing when everybody's a doctor. Is there a doctor in the house? Way too many. Too many. So, the schools of preaching that were on the left are gone, or nearly so. And the sound schools of preaching that were on the right are sorely divided over these last few years because of something that happened at Apologetics Press with Bert Thompson, Dave Miller, Memphis School of Preaching, some unnamed money source in Alabama. You've heard the expression, the pot calling the kettle black. You know what that is illustrating? Hypocrisy. That's what that means. So here's the one somebody that says, you know, you shouldn't be doing such and so when this one's doing the same thing. Well, that's just like the pot calling the kettle black. Because they've both been in the fire. They've both been dirtied up by the soot. And they're in the same condition. It answers to Matthew chapter 7. Don't take the speck out of your brother's eye when you've got the log in your own. It's hypocrisy. Well, this is what's happening among some of these who otherwise sound brethren. The pot's calling the kettle's black. There's a pot down in Texas that's calling the kettle down in Tennessee black when they're guilty of the same thing. And here's what their problem is. Texas tells Tennessee, the brethren in Texas are talking to the brethren at Memphis School of Preaching. They're saying, listen, you are endorsing a false teacher, Dave Miller. You have at the congregation now where you hold your school, the preacher who's teaching error. And we want to talk with you, brethren, about these things. Let's discuss this. Let's debate this. Let's get an answer to these things and get this settled. We can't have fellowship with error. And they're not answering. They won't answer. They won't come back. They won't answer. They won't discuss. They won't debate. They won't do anything. But the problem with Texas is they're guilty of the same thing. By using women in unauthorized manners. And some of us are saying, we need to talk about this. We need to debate this. We need to discuss this. And they will not answer a word. The pot's calling the kettle black. They're guilty of the same thing. So what's happened amongst those brethren? Here's just a thumbnail of what's taking place these days, in the last 2 or 3 years, 4 years. Schools of preaching in Texas are opposed to the brethren in Tennessee. And then because there's some brethren in Missouri holding hands with brethren in Tennessee, Texas doesn't like either one of them. But that's not all. There's some brethren in Tennessee who are opposing other brethren in Tennessee. But then there's some brethren in Texas holding hands with brethren in Tennessee, and they're opposing brethren in Florida. Where will it end? I suppose it'll end when the Lord comes back. Brethren, we can't have a part of this kind of nonsense. This should not be. But it's happening all the time. This recording is going to be on the internet. I may hear about it, I may not, I don't know. I don't care. But this is what's happening. And we ought not to have a part in such a thing. Now, do you feel terrible? Don't you feel bad that we can't have fellowship with some of this? I hope not. You shouldn't feel badly about that. If Rager never has fellowship with anybody else other than God, what does it matter? What does it matter? Thankfully, there's still some brethren we can have some fellowship with. To my knowledge, I think we can still have fellowship with brethren in Sullivan, Missouri. Where brother, tell me his name, Ben Justice preaches. We can still do that. Here's the key feature. Those on the left, for many, many, many years, 100 years at least, key feature was money talks. Now, with money, you're going to have politics. That's why politics is in a bracket. And for the past number of years, those who were on the right, those who were pretty sound, those who were standing for the right at least for a while, the key feature there these days is politics. With some money involved from Texas and Alabama. For the most part, now it's politics. If you don't play by my rules, I'm not going to have anything to do with you. It's not, let's come and reason together, Isaiah 1 verse 18. It's, I don't like who you're holding hands with. I don't like the way you put that in that article. I don't think you said that right. Or whatever. Politics. Money over there, politics over there. Politics and money always go hand in hand. Guess what? Politics, its simplest definition is the rules of order. We got to have some rules before we can have proper interchange between one another or congregations. There's got to be some rules. We've got to understand where each other's at. And it takes money to live, doesn't it? It takes money to operate things. It takes money to pay these bills, whatever. It takes money to do the Lord's work. The Lord understood that. He told us how to collect it. Money and rules, they're not wrong, but they're sorely abused by so many. So, the current apostasy. Where are we today? There still is a remnant, the Church of Christ. There still is a remnant. It's where it's always been. And the Lord willing, and if we are true to the book, that's where we will remain. We're right where we started. Now, some of you go back way more years than I do with association with this body of believers. See, before Rager Road, it was Williams Road. Before that was Gates Street, something like that. And before that, I don't know. Say it if you know. Parsons Avenue. Okay, so there was some spreading out and establishing new congregations. And I have no doubts, but in those days, there was sweet harmony among those brethren. Can't say that today. Something's wrong. But we're right where we started. And it's where we ought to finish. It's where we ought to end. Don't cry about not having fellowship with the churches in the area. Cry that we cannot have fellowship. Cry that they've gone too far. Remember the closing verse this morning? They have together become unprofitable. They've all turned aside. Now, we ought not to get so goofy about this and think that we have the Elijah syndrome. You know, I'm the only one left. No, but it's going to be a extremely small minority. That's the way it's always been. That's why that term remnant is there. God used it, I didn't. He invented that word, not me. It's always been that way, brethren. We need to be aware of it. Be cautious. Be careful. Watch out where you send your children. Watch out when those children here grow up and where they worship and who they come in contact with. Be careful about your daughters and your sons. Watch out for them. Because not everything that says Church of Christ is the Lord's body. Just the remnant. That's all. And so we want to finish right where Paul did. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the course. I have kept the faith. That's what we want to be able to say. And henceforth there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give to me on that day, not to me only, but of all them that have loved his appearing. This is where we want to finish. Brethren, let's be faithful. Let's be strong. These lessons today have not been a pleasure for me to teach, but necessary. But I just needed, it was time for us to be reminded, because we're going through the preaching of Jesus in the New Testament. We were to be reminded at this time of the plants that the Father hasn't planted, and the one that he did plant seems to keep falling and crumbling, but it doesn't have to. Let's be faithful. I'm finished. Do we need the prayers of the congregation? Let us know while we stand and sing this song of encouragement.